Hour number one of KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show straight ahead.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Why do we never get...
Hey, folks, welcome to a beautiful day in December. It's sunny and warm after a rainy weekend, and we're happy. This is the 116th Christmas bird count, and it begins tomorrow. You heard about that, Mrs. Future?
Only from you. What happens with these bird counts? Is this a national fascination with birds? Is this a official government reckoning? Are we looking for birds that we haven't seen for a while? What's going on?
All that good stuff. We are definitely looking for any changes that have gone on in the population of birds. Mm-hmm. The bird count began over a century ago. It's relied on citizen scientists, so people like you and me and everyone else out there who likes birds and wants to keep track of them.
I'll tell you, 100 years ago, it was probably really popular because people didn't have television and they didn't drive and they spent a lot more time in nature. So how is it going now after 100 years? What's new in the citizen scientist counting?
It's gotten pretty scientific. There's a specific methodology. All participants make arrangements in advance with the circle compiler within an established circle, but anyone can participate. So you do have your local group. Each count takes place in an established 15-mile-wide diameter circle, for example. Mm-hmm. And each circle is organized by a count compiler.
Mm-hmm. Person. That's the official title.
The count compiler, yes.
Good day, everyone. I'm the count compiler. I'm here to account for the counting of the birds.
For the bird circle in which you are part of.
Yes.
Specified routes. There's a number of circles for your town, and you kind of choose the one that you want to be part of. You count every bird you see and hear all day in that circle.
Wow. This sounds like something that would be so great for kids or people who just want to know the names of the birds in their neighborhood. You know, what kind of birds are...
Yeah, what kind is part of it, there. But it's not just a species tally.
Mm-hmm.
No. All birds are counted all day. Gives you an indication of the total number of birds in your circle that day.
I wonder how you know if you're counting unique birds or if you're counting the same bird over and over
again. Flying back and forth in front of you.
Right.
Well, I'm sure they have rules about that. That's a good question, Mrs. Future. I'm sure it's in the FAQ of their website, which we do have linked to our website.
Ah, right. All right. So all of you bird enthusiasts out there can go to drfutureshow.com to the links page /links. drfutureshow.com.
If your home is within the circle that you choose, you can stay at home and report the birds that visit your feeder.
Oh, cool.
On a count day.
All right.
As long as you've spoken to your count compiler.
So this is a national effort, and when is it happening?
It starts tomorrow.
Wow. There's so many things happening in this holiday season. I see you've got a number of little public service announcements right in front of you.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Busy time of year, but just in case you have any holes in your social schedule, there's some wonderful things you can do with your time.
Yes, the Synergy Solstice Party looks like fun.
Synergy Solstice Party!
With Myra Stark.
Oh, one of my favorite musicians, a local treasure.
Yes.
Unstoppable joy. Oh.
A winter gathering, live music, dancing, kirtan, for those uninitiated with that. It's kind of a singing, right?
Yeah, it's kind of chanting and singing and, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Solstice rituals, zikar, sound bath. There you go, sound bath. So you get a little bit of the sonic healing at the event.
Yes.
Yoga, meditation, and more.
Okay, so this is Saturday night, right? Mm-hmm. At the Divinitree Yoga Studio.
2805 West Mission, $22 at the door, $15 in advance. And you can go to devotionalliving.org.
For more details. All right. And that starts at what time?
That's all the time, my dear. No, it starts at 5:30 p.m. to midnight.
Okay.
Saturday, December 19th.
Right. All right. So now you know, folks. Some okay.
Synergy solstice event.
There you go. For all you solstice.
I wouldn't call it a party, but it does have live music and dancing. But
it's
also
an ecstatic dance and singing experience.
A winter gathering.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And then what else? I know our friend Jane is really into.
Yes. Well, this is the next month.
Annual upcoming Fungus Fair.
The Secret Life of Mushrooms. Yes, the 42nd annual Santa Cruz Fungus Fair is coming right up. Friday, January 8th, 2 to 6 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, January 9th and 10th.
All right, so start studying up on your mushrooms, folks. You'll get a chance to go mucking in the woods and looking with friends and also attending lectures and trying new recipes.
I'm not sure it's called mucking in the woods. I don't think it's called shrooming in the woods either. If you're looking for the mushrooms, probably something else.
For me, it would be clueless in the woods.
Mucking. No, mucking is what I did last weekend. I was visiting a friend of mine who had to muck the stalls of horses and sheep.
I see. That's where your boots are literally in the muck.
Well, that's where you get rid of the muck. You collect it.
Right.
That's mucking. No, mm-hmm. I think looking for fungi, I'm not sure what you call that. Mm-hmm. That's the Fungus Fair, January 8th and 9th.
All right. So happy holidays, everybody. I hope you are making good use of your time and making these short days count. What else you got for us here before we go to our next break?
Well, they have starting to impose rules on drones.
Oh, this, yes, a little wake-up call, Dr. Future, but you know this has been coming for a long time.
Yeah.
Now, for those of us who are tracking, you know, Dr. Future, of course, got a drone for his birthday, and he goes out every single day and does a beautiful sunset shot of the day with his drone. And occasionally he posts those on Facebook. He's been getting really good with it.
Yeah.
News today.
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of interesting. It's been like the Wild West in many ways, and now the Wild West is the Midwest. It's not getting quite as exciting as it used to be.
The Wild West is no longer wild.
No, it's well, you know, it's in, you have to move to new territory. Maybe remote-controlled submarines might be more fun.
All right, on that note.
Anyway.
We're going to go hear a little bit from our friend Ben.
I'll tell you about the rules after we get back.
We'll be right back. Dr. Future Show on KSEO. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Well, do you know that drones are probably going to be one of the most common high-tech presents for Christmas this year?
I know. It's amazing. It's the big ask for Santa Claus. Right?
Yeah.
A lot of people want their drone this year.
So this has caused a lot of stress to the Federal Aviation Administration because they're usually responsible for regulating the airspace.
Right.
And until now, there really hasn't been much of a demand to be in the airspace below 400 feet.
Right.
Which is what we're talking about here from
zero to
400.
Yeah, the aviation hobbyists with the remote control airplanes have been few and far between because it's almost like being a pilot. You have to make your own plane. You have to know the rules of aviation. So there hasn't been a lot of need to be super regulatory.
What's made them so popular is not only the fact that you can so easily control them in close space, but they carry cameras on board. Cameras changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, you were able to do art, and you were able to do commerce, surveillance. You can look at your crops to see how well they're doing from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
You can investigate the boundaries of your property, all kinds of things. It was fantastic. But then we started having drone crashes, like one into the hot springs in Yellowstone. Did not bring good publicity.
Mm.
One that crashed and injured a little baby. Very bad for the business.
Not a laughing matter.
Interfering with fighting wildfires. Not good.
Mm-hmm.
A drone hits a groom in the head during a wedding shoot.
Oh, I guess he didn't know how to use the follow me mode.
That could be bad, could be funny. But not really good.
It would be one of those, like, America's funniest home videos, you know.
Drone lands on the White House lawn. That would only be funny if an alien walked out.
Mm, yeah, right. Nice planet. We'll take it.
The day the Earth went into action. So cameras changed everything, and it's become normal. I mean, just about anybody you know, somebody has one. And now the DJI Phantoms are capable of being programmable, you know, so that you can go to different locations regularly with them. The octocopters are carrying cinematic cameras. Even the small ones carry cameras good enough for everyone to get cinematic shots in their home videos. It makes sense that they'd be very popular. So the rules are that you need to register for $5 with the FAA. That's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. $5. And if you register by the 21st of January, you'll get it back.
Oh, register for free.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, the FAA does not want to have to take on a whole bunch of regulatory responsibility. They really want this to be as much of an honor code as it has been for the last 50 years with the aviation remote control pilots. Yeah. That just because the drone companies are making it easy to fly drones and the batteries are making it such that you don't really need to understand a lot about how the plane works, you still need to be responsible. And so they've been studying this for the last year, and now they're ready to send you information. I mean, really, the reason they want to register is because they treat this as an informed hobbyist practice, and they want everyone to know what the rules are, and they want people to honor the rules for each other's safety.
Well, the biggest safety issue so far, it's been unskilled operators.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people buying drones for presents and then opening up and then flying it or letting somebody take over the controls who doesn't know what they're doing.
Sure.
Something like that.
Yeah, we were just reading recently about the California Highway Patrol having a traffic copter that was 100 feet away from a drone that was out of its approved airspace. And they followed that drone down and they found that it was a foreign exchange student.
Didn't want to get in trouble.
Who didn't know that he was violating any laws and was, of course, you know, really probably distraught to be found by the California Highway Patrol just because he was flying his drone. Yeah,
common issue. You're going to see a lot of this because 500,000 new unskilled aviators, and that's what they call them, aviators,
mm-hmm.
are flying. You're bound to see something not good happen, sadly.
So,
but
Dr.
hopefully
Future,
we'll see enough good
we're
things
gonna
happen.
We're going to be waiting for the cars to go automatic, but the drones, we want to be able to control ourselves, huh? Doesn't there seem like it's a little backwards?
Well, this is a hobby. Yeah, this is fun.
Right.
This is the drones are getting so that they're computer controlled too.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and they're rapidly going the way of software as well. And as they do, they'll get safer.
Sure.
Because they'll get easier to fly. One of the big breakthrough areas is a field called obstacle avoidance. And it's all about creating the software that keeps them from hitting stuff. And that's mm-hmm. the problem, right? You want to be able to do that. There's even software being designed to help them in emergencies. Like, for example, most drones are quadricopters and they have four propellers. Mm-hmm. If one of them goes out, just one of them, the whole thing falls like a brick from the sky.
Yeah.
You know, it's had not much an aerodynamic.
And there's nothing to protect anything underneath that might get hit.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing to stop that drone from causing some serious crash damage.
So they should have some kind of noise maybe that they start to emit if they're falling out of control so people can hear them, right? Or a light that goes on them maybe might be interesting. But anyway, our regulators will be thinking about this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, you need something, right? And in software will ultimately solve the problem. Zoe was telling me, as one of our local flyers, was telling me that she's heard of software that will be able to compensate if one of the rotors goes out
mm-hmm.
and starts spinning the other one so that it has a little bit of stability.
Oh, wow.
You know, maybe you can limp home, so to speak.
Right, or at least land without hitting something.
Yeah, how to limp home on three rotors. Whoever writes that software is going to do well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so you're going to register. You're going to join the official registered drone pilots of America.
Unfortunately, I'm not an unskilled pilot, so that's good. That's good. That means
yeah, you've been practicing a lot. You're pretty skilled these days.
Yeah, and I do think, it's like ham radio operators requiring a license for the public airwaves. And this is public airspace, so it kind of makes sense that you'd start to have some competency tests that will be done. Now, there will be a division between professional drones and the hobbyist ones, of course. And with them so fast, cheap, and out of control, $20, you can get a micro drone at Amazon, for example, or Fry's.
And anybody in your family can get a tennis racket to, you know, if you're getting a little pesky with them.
So I don't know about, it's not like, a serious investment like a ham radio set. So it'd be interesting to see how you regulate a fast, cheap, out of control technology like drones.
Yeah.
That'd be fascinating to watch this.
Yeah. Well, I think the main thing is that, of course, the news media likes to dwell on what people should be afraid of, right? That drones, oh, of course, they can be a weapon, a flying weapon, out of control. Oh, no, another terrorist, a threat. But actually, most of the people in the country who are interested in drones want to fly them for the fun of it and for very practical things that they want to see happen. And it's, you know, it's just the random person that needs to be prevented from doing something harmful. So, of course, the registry is a way for the FAA to be in communication with all the people using drones.
Yeah, they'll be tracked a little bit. Which is, even the drone industry has done that. And they've included software in the drones now to, like, not work when they're near an airport, to not go above 400 feet, the official limit of drones, stuff like that. Geofencing stuff.
Yeah, and the registration is not so much a punitive thing. It's really administrative. It's meant to give the government ways of sharing information that's vital to the pilots, the drone aviators.
It's still very early. Like, the Japanese are a little more advanced on this stuff.
Oh, yeah?
And yeah. They realize that even with some regulations, you're going to have really bad drone pilots out there. So they've created drone police that carry nets. And when they detect a bad driving pilot, they'll throw the net out and take that drone.
You are being confiscated.
Yeah,
so you have not observed the public mandates.
So this whole layer of transportation aerial infrastructure has yet to evolve in this country.
Yeah.
But watch Japan. I think that'll be interesting.
That's great. Okay. Mm-hmm. We haven't got our drone nets yet, but they're coming.
I've seen them. Maker Faire. Maker Faire has these gatherings where drones are brought into an arena.
A net cage.
And they have at it with each other, and whoever's left flying, you know, and they try all kinds of weird stuff to get each other out of the air. It's hilarious. I like the fishing lines that dangle from one, fouling the props of others.
Right.
It's really effective.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to watch this whole world, because it's going to get smarter, and it's going to get more sophisticated, and it's going to get more useful and more dangerous all at the same time. One of the true dramatic stories evolving in our public spaces here.
What a world.
Yeah.
What a world. Well, all right. We're going to be back in just a few minutes with a whole bunch of other headlines. Do you want to just give a quick little teaser before we head off to the midtime break?
Oh, about the black hole that swallowed a sun and burped? No, that was last week. The chimpanzees. Yeah, video conferencing with chimpanzees. Let's talk about that. Interspecies communications.
All right, folks. Dr. Future Show. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. In the names of improving communication with other species, a team of researchers will be giving chimpanzees around the world video conferencing equipment to study how they adapt to social technology.
Oh boy, chimps with their own Skypes? Are they getting cell phones? What are we giving these chimpanzees?
Well, I have been perusing this article very closely, and it doesn't tell you exactly the name of the equipment, but it does tell you that it's like Skype.
Mm-hmm.
It's a similar type of deal. It's video conferencing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supported by Peter Gabriel, the singer-songwriter, who we've traveled with in previous adventures.
Absolutely, yes. On the WOMAD tour, he came into the Future Zone.
Right. We ran the Future Zone.
That's right.
He came to visit one night. Oh, that's another story. So this is an attempt to look at how apes use Skype, basically. Mm-hmm. What will they do?
I see. I guess the data on humans doesn't give us all the information that we need.
Will they want to talk to us or other apes or not at all, not even use it? Right. So, well, a chimpanzee group at the Monkey World in Dorset, UK will receive the first batch of video conferencing equipment. And when they adapt it, they plan to hook up the monkeys in Monkey World with some other monkeys in Africa.
Oh, boy.
Probably the same species.
Do you think they'll need a Microsoft translator? I mean, if we call somebody in Africa, we might need a translator, right? What language are these monkeys supposed to be speaking
to
each
monkey,
other?
Why, monkey, of course. You know, it's universal language.
I wonder if they'll understand each other.
Well, they might start evolving the language, too. You know, they might take advantage of the Skype connection or the video conferencing equipment. Let's keep this generic.
Yes. Yes, I'm sure that the chimps on both sides of the call will pick up some new words in their language, right, in the monkey language.
Yeah. The researchers are curious as to what they'll do with this technology.
I'm pretty curious about these researchers. What are the researchers trying to find out?
They're thinking about how to install a video conferencing gear in a tree, you know, and so it's friendly to the ape, you know, so that they know how to use it without.
Yeah, I could see that because if you can install something in a tree that is chimpanzee proof, then you could probably install something like the equivalent of a public telephone anywhere in a shopping mall, say. Right?
Yeah, I guess it is kind of like a public telephone. In a way. It's installing a public phone system for the monkeys. Will they use it? And if so, for what? That's the burning questions on the minds of these researchers. Mm-hmm. In social media for communicating with other species or by other species. Mm-hmm. Interesting idea. Don't you think?
It's hilarious.
You know,
I can't wait to see it. The article says they're going to make a documentary about it. It sounds great.
It should be very interesting. If my experience has any value to this, let's see. I never worked with chimps, but I did work with kids using early video conferencing equipment.
Really?
Yeah, between Russia and the U.S., there'd be various events that'd be going on from 3220 Sacramento and San Francisco, and Russian parties that Joel Schatz was throwing in Moscow or invited to. And we'd be often talking to high-end mucky mucks in government and KGB.
Not monkey mucks.
Mucky mucks.
Mucky mucks. Okay.
But they would have their kids there.
Right
off of the party. And when the adults were busy schmoozing, the kids would use the video phones to communicate. And they didn't speak Russian or English at either end, but what they did do, well, what can I say on the air? I can say they showed each other body parts.
Did they?
They did.
How old were these kids?
You know, 7, 8. You know, I mean, very, very innocently. But I hope this is me. So what monkeys will do, chimpanzees will do, our ancestors.
Oh, boy.
We'll see.
Okay. Stay tuned. All right, that's from thetechtimes.com.
Yes.
A little insight into video conferencing for monkeys.
Meanwhile, we're working on the next level of communication. Charles Osman sent me a link on the new mind-reading headsets.
Mm-hmm. New mind-reading headsets. Okay, now, you had a game that was a Star Wars game where you were supposed to practice your Jedi skills, and you would put on this little mind-reading headset,
right,
and then you would use that to try and like create a little air burst that would lift a ping-pong ball in a tube.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that didn't really work.
That's probably why it was a toy. A Jedi training tool that you would have to really be a Jedi for it to work, and if you weren't a Jedi, then No guarantees.
Most of this biofeedback stuff has not really worked, at least in terms of the world of entertainment, for medical reasons, where you can reduce your blood pressure or heart rate, that sort of thing, or urinary retention rates, which is even more important. Then biofeedback is really useful.
So it's been successful in medical feedback situations,
more so, I think,
but not so much in entertainment.
Not yet. I mean,
I was a huge fan of the Wild Divine, which was a galvanized skin measurement.
Yeah.
And it was the interface for all of these wonderful games in the Wild Divine universe, little virtual world. I thought that was great.
What did you like about it? You see, I think the reason why it's not so popular is that it's not a stimulus response game. It's not where you push something and something happens. It's not a muscular twitch game, as they say. Mm-hmm. It revolves.
You don't have enough control. Yeah. You actually have to surrender control because you're doing things like affecting your brainwave measurement.
Yeah, it's all about relaxing, EKGs, and letting go,
things
and de-stressing.
That are outside of your normal six senses.
Yeah.
Right. Your normal six sense. It's your seventh sense.
They're all about de-stressing to get in sync with the world.
Right.
And that's very different
deep breathing.
From adrenaline highs that you would normally get in a game environment.
And changing your consciousness so that you're going from kind of the busy do-do-do mind to the relaxed imagination alpha state before you fall asleep and dream.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's not classically what we go for games. But hey, if you need to de-stress and relax, why not? Finally, we start to have some games for adults rather than just the Twitch games.
And so what do you think about this mind-reading headset? Do you think that this mind-reading headset has more of a chance of success than ones in the past?
Well, I think it's the front end to a whole new line of products that will be in the $300 to $500 range that tune directly into your body.
Right.
And it won't just be brain waves, but it'll also be EKG, EEG is what this is, EMG, muscular tension. The frontalis muscle is well-known way of de-stressing by tuning into frontalis activity.
Yeah, my relatives were telling me that they have been extremely successful in their weight loss programs by using stuff like Fitbit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, we're on a revolution here. This is really exciting times.
Having a little device that's giving you some feedback on a regular basis about how much energy you're using, how many steps you've walked, how much food you've eaten. This makes a real difference in your daily habits.
Mm-hmm. An Emotives headset is measuring the electrical signals of the brain, the EEGs, and it transmits the EEG of your brain wirelessly to your mobile device or your PC. And then it looks at your facial expressions as well. And you're able to then play with moods, emotions, mental performance, control objects with your mind, a whole other range of awareness that we normally don't have.
Now, is this something you could see yourself using?
Yes. No.
What would you do with it? Would you try and fly your drone with it?
Control people with my... Oh, not people. Control objects with my mind.
Oh, and so instead of one ring to rule them all, it would be one headset.
Put on the headset and be Dr. Emotive. Well, actually, I don't want to control people. I just want them to listen to me.
Sure, famous last words. I don't know.
I'm sorry.
And with all that, with the headset, I'm sure the power would go to your head.
Yes, and I'd put on the ZEG electroencephalogram transmitters and change things.
What would you change besides your own number of steps you take every day?
Oh, well, I'd want everyone to accept me. Yes. And of course, I know I have to accept myself first.
You're funny. So popularity, that's what you would use this biofeedback device for?
Status and recognition, of course.
Oh, okay.
What else is there? Apps and games to control objects? Maybe. That sounds interesting. They're working on mostly stress reduction, focus optimization, which is really good for college exams.
I need focus optimization.
Wait, what exams are coming up? What do you need focus for?
I just feel like every day is so full. My to-do list is very long, so I need focus optimization.
Focus on, there you go. Well, that's one of the options here. How about controlling your surroundings? Any value to that?
Yeah, well, I would really like it if my surroundings didn't need to be controlled, if they were relatively harmonious. You know, I don't like control from exterior sources. I prefer control to be something that is like self-discipline.
So you like a nice, quiet, benign environment, and you're in charge. Of any change that might happen in the environment.
Well, let's say I would like to be at cause and I don't want to be controlled by someone else. And in the words of Terrence McKenna, I like it when it's out of control because then I don't have to worry about whose control it's out of.
Good thought.
Okay. Well,
I do like it when you sometimes can just lie back and let somebody else entertain you. That's kind of fun too.
Yeah, definitely. I like that a lot. All right, I think it's time to go to our next break. You're listening to the Dr. Future Show on KSEO.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. There was a very interesting article this week in the Singularity Hub about designing robots that learn as effortlessly as our babies.
Wow. I really find it hard to believe that robots can learn like babies.
Well, they're trying. You see, we look at how does a baby learn? How does these wide-eyed, rosy-cheeked little babbling humans, they don't look like the ultimate learning machine, but...
Well, the way that robots learn is so different. I mean, robots are basically really inefficient. You know, they just chew lots and lots and lots of data, and then they come up with some very simplistic way of categorizing it, and then we call that thinking. But babies are nothing like that.
No. Some of our top eggheads have put their brains to this, and they've come up with a secret sauce. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to create that secret sauce now. And by watching humans learn, they do three things. They watch, they imitate, they extrapolate.
Mm-hmm. That sounds
more
like babies.
They watch, they imitate, they extrapolate. And that's what babies do.
Definitely.
All right. So what if our machines did that?
Well, how can they do that? What can they do?
They watch.
Well, they do imitate. Have cameras. Well, the imitate part, that's very hard. How can a robot imitate what it sees? It would have to have a body.
Well, that's where the robots come in, mm-hmm. right? They imitate. They copy. Like if you make a motion, they would replicate that motion.
I think with a baby, there's like an aha moment where it realizes that it has a hand. And then it realizes that it's connected to that hand. And then that hand is something that it can move. These are all big moments for babies, but I don't know how the robots are going to achieve having those moments.
Well, they need a backplane to reflect from to realize that moving is actually something that's new to them, mm-hmm. which they didn't have before. Mm. In the backplane, that's where memory exists.
Right. Yeah, well, the idea of a self-reflective robot, a robot that knows that it's a robot that knows that it's a hand.
That it was created.
These are things that...
Not by God.
Are sci-fi. Sounds like sci-fi.
I said, I'm a robot that was created by God. What would that be like? Okay, well, they are working right now on the imitative part, especially, because humans are the most imitative creature on the planet. It's what we know best. Imitation. That's our strength mm-hmm. of the species. We imitate better than anyone. It's got to be useful. So our robots, of course, will learn how to do that. We have a very interesting article that covers some of the experiments in this in much more detail than the time that we have here to discuss this. And we have several other articles we want to get to. But if you're interested in babies and machines, check out this article from the Singularity Hub.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Robots. The new babies.
I know. And speaking of robots, you remember Mystery Science Theater 3000?
Oh, yes. I'm a big fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Well, there was a Kickstarter campaign.
It's a great way to watch B-movies. It makes them much better with the commentary.
Exactly. And millions have agreed with you, my dear. So they have raised millions to bring back Mystery Science Theater 3000. So they had a Kickstarter funding, and they set a record amount. They beat Veronica Mars, which was the movie last year. That was a cult classic that was brought back. And they've raised over $5.7 million in a month.
Wow. Well,
$5.7 million.
I'm a fan. I'm not surprised that there's a lot of fans out there that would respond to a Kickstarter.
Yeah, isn't that cool? And they've also had another $425,000 from other sources besides Kickstarter to do 14 episodes.
Cool. So we're going to be watching some great B movies in the next year or two.
Yeah, I think so.
The gang from Mystery Science Theater. Yeah. Great. So a janitor locked on a spaceship with two robots forced to watch old movies.
Old B movies, because the B movies could be newer now. And they'll have another set of characters to play with, so they can evolve it. Part of their secret sauce here is to bring in some celebs, like Mark Hamill. He'll be brought back into the mainstream with the release of the Star Wars movie.
Great. Maybe they'll have some better movies than they used to have, right?
Yeah. Jack Black.
Oh, he's perfect. Yeah, in fact, a lot of his movies would probably make make the rounds for Mystery Science Theater. I find myself doing a lot of cat calls during some Jack Black movies.
Yeah, did you do any sci-fi? See, that was their specialty, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Well, King Kong, I don't know.
Come on, Jack, do a sci-fi movie just for us. Probably coming out next year. They're not giving an exact release date yet. That's going to be fun.
Well, that's good news. All right, Mystery Science Theater, I'm so glad you hit your mark with the Kickstarter campaign.
You want to get $50 million? Probably a little harder than winning the lottery, but you know, you want to get $50 million? Well, there's a very interesting story about Seattle billionaire Paul Allen. In cahoots with the federal government, they have a plan that's offering $50 million for the city that comes up with the most innovative, revolutionary plan to address traffic problems.
All right. Great. Right?
And define the future of transportation in the process.
So, well,
what innovative revolutionary plan do you have to address traffic problems?
Well, we've certainly discussed a lot of those on this show.
We have.
If you combine the autonomous car with the Uber home driver pool, right? People who drive in their spare time to pick up extra money. We have autonomous
Uber
cars that drive in their spare time to pick up extra money. And that changes the way that transportation works in a city. I mean, we've talked about this a lot. You don't need cars once you have a certain level of autonomy because people, you don't have to park your car.
Yeah, yeah. It's so funny because remember in Back to the Future, they landed in 2015 and the saying was, roads, where we're going, we don't need roads. But look, it's 2015 now, and
roads
are worse than they ever have been. Yeah. You know, it hasn't been working.
Well, and yet the fact that we're regulating drones.
Well, it does work. But
okay. I mean, the flying vehicles, the vertical takeoff and landing vehicles are becoming real. And, you know, that's going to be probably as significant on what happens to future transportation in town as the autonomous car.
Especially as the battery issue is solved. Once we have longer batteries, then the drones can fly and carry stuff, and they'll just do their thing and not bother anyone, and it'll just be part of a delivery system that's automatic.
Right, and the thing is that, you know, roads are 2D because they're from point A to point B, but flying machines are 3D.
Yeah,
and so they
take
have
a lot of traffic
many
off the
more
roads.
Pathways to get where they're going. So that should really change the nature of
traffic. Yeah, and the FAA has figured out flight paths for thousands and thousands and thousands of airplanes up in the air at the same time. So they're already thinking in big numbers already. It's just another level of scale, just scaling that up again.
Right.
And machines should be capable of that.
Sure.
So air transportation will become, I wouldn't call it trivial, I would just call it normal.
Right.
Really fast.
Yeah.
You know, and that's largely because our technology for local airspace has gotten so good. So that the realms of the bees and the insects are now ours as well.
Hmm.
I think there's going to be a lot of issues about how do we get along with the other life forms that are flying in the airspace.
Yeah.
You know, what do the birds and the bees have to say about us and getting into their zone?
Well, it seems like if we're going to go into a new part of the Earth's ecosystem, you know, if we're going to get off the ground and become flying creatures, then we're going to have to preserve the environments for the existing flying creatures.
There's going to have to be some awareness of it, for sure.
I mean, collision detection can't just be machine to machine. Collision detection has to include living creatures.
And we are developing lots of sensors to be able to do that, the collision avoidance being the beginning of that. And that's the big problem. That's what everyone's afraid of, is that a drone will hit an airplane, or birds hit planes all the time.
Yeah.
We can't change their behavior, but we can change the behavior of the machines.
Right. Yeah, we have to anticipate the animals and their normality, like what they're used to doing.
Yeah, which shouldn't be that hard to do.
Because it's easier for us to learn and adjust.
That shouldn't be a big deal.
Will.
Right? We should just know that.
Sure.
Yeah, it's like usually pretty predictable from our perspective.
If we stop long enough to look at what they're doing. Right?
We do. We can. I mean, there are people that specialize in that. You know, I think every bird and every insect has its experts in our species. That knowledge is already out there. We just need to tap it. Utilize what's already known and apply it to evolving the infrastructure that allows that space to cohabitate with the other creatures.
Yeah. Well, we need to provide incentives, because even though some people might have that awareness, the people that are making, you know, decisions in other areas, like people inventing machines, are not necessarily thinking about how those machines are affecting the biosphere. And even people who are mutating genes are not thinking about how the historic life forms are going to be affected by those
mutations. But they will. That's why I like being Dr. Future. Because they already are there in my mind.
Yeah, it's just the voice of the existing life needs to be louder.
The existing now needs to go in that direction.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I'm saying it's not hard. It's not impossible for us to tune into other species and be part of a larger network, especially if they start using our Skype. You know, if the monkeys start using Skype.
Where we started.
Then it's not just our infrastructure anymore,
is it? We're just going to plug all of the creatures, large and small, into the intelligence system managed by computers, and then everyone will be better off.
Well,
that's the doctor's future solution.
I think it should be an interspecies thing. Yeah, we're part of a much larger network of connections, and hey, let's rejoice in that. Yeah, so I say, let's go for it.
All right, well, we're going to give someone a call for the next hour and bring in our guest, who is known by her nom de plume as Nola Evangelista.
Yes. She has a book that promises to be a really good Christmas stocking stuffer, I think you'll appreciate. Should we say? No, maybe.
All right, folks.
No, we're going to wait.
Dr. Future Show is going to cut out now for some traffic and news and weather, and then we'll be back with more interesting
50 famous females.